backhanded compliments. You know the type. The kind of comment that has the gloss of praise but the bite of insult. A pronouncement that on the surface of things highlights something positive but twists it into something negative. I love how you don't care about your appearance. Or, that is a surprisingly good idea. Or my personal favorite, you're so funny for a priest. You could argue that the phrase good Samaritan falls into this category. Because when you take a step back, to call the Samaritan who stopped and tended to the wounded man on the side of the road good is really saying he's a great guy for a Samaritan. It's a backhanded compliment that maligns an entire race of people. Imagine if the man was from, say, Guatemala, and this was the parable of the good Latino. That would imply that most Latinos are bad or evil, but this one here is an exception. As hard as it is to imagine, this one particular Guatemalan man is a good Latino. That would be terribly racist. And Jesus himself would not be pleased with this characterization. Now, you'll note that not once does Jesus ever refer to the Samaritan man as the good Samaritan. But this is how the parable has been handed down to us. One of Jesus' most popular stories has been saddled with a title he never used and never would have used. But still, Jews and Samaritans had a long history of enmity. They saw each other as religious heretics. Their armies had battles. They wanted nothing to do with one another. So the identities of those involved in the parable matters. It's what makes this such a radical story. It would still be a nice lesson about compassion if we didn't know the nationalities or religious affiliations of those involved. But we do. And the fact that Samaritans and Jews hated each other is what packs the parabolic punch, especially as the original audience, like Jesus himself, was Jewish. Now, I recognize this isn't the standard way we relate to this story. This is one of those crossover parables that has infiltrated secular society. The phrase Good Samaritan is used by religious and non-religious folks alike to describe someone who has done a good deed or gone out of their way to help someone. The guy who stops to help a stranded motorist change a tire on I-95 is branded a good Samaritan. The woman who brings a lost child to the police kiosk at Hershey Park is called a good Samaritan. But when we only think about a good Samaritan as a do-gooder, we've effectively domesticated a powerful and multi-layered story of what it means to embody God's love across deep cultural and racial divides. And we don't do justice to Jesus' deeper, challenging lesson. Often when we hear such story-based parables, we consciously or subconsciously insert ourselves and view the proceedings primarily from a particular perspective. It's easy for us to identify with the Samaritan in this story, and I think that's often the default reading. Despite our personal faults, we want to see ourselves as the hero. I'm a good person, we tell ourselves. Despite our complicity in things like racism and human suffering, we want everyone to know that at our core, we are good people. Hey, I'm sitting in church, for God's sake. But if we're honest with ourselves, more often than not, we play the role of the priest and Levite, the ones who walk right on past the suffering man in the ditch. And that's where the parable gets challenging. That's where it turns from a sweet Sunday school story about helping others to one that convicts us. Because while we have all gone out of our way to help others on occasion, it's not the norm. If it were, there would have been no need for Jesus to tell this story. If concern for others was the default mode of the human condition, rather than inward-looking self-centeredness, this parable would be superfluous. If reaching across the great divide to help those who don't look like us or act like us or even like us, if that was the way we normally interacted with others, we wouldn't need this parable. But it's not. Leaving our comfort zones to help others is the exception, not the rule, which is precisely why Jesus tells this compelling story in the first place, and why he chooses the Samaritan as the hero of a story told to a Jewish audience. I'm not exactly sure what the modern equivalent would be. Maybe the Samaritan would be an immigrant who stops by to help someone who had just attended a rally at which immigrants were demonized and dehumanized. Or perhaps the Samaritan would be a gay man binding up the wounds of an evangelical pastor who has been spewing hate from the pulpit. Who knows? But the point is that the surprising juxtaposition of Samaritan and Jew would have been both jarring and shocking to Jesus' original hearers. And this mind-blowing, boundary-busting parable transcends the nice, feel-good story that's often portrayed. As the Samaritan traveled along that road to Jericho and witnessed the man, we hear that he was moved with pity. In other translations, it's he had compassion on him. But it moves beyond mere pity or compassion. He saw the man's humanity, not his ethnicity or his politics or his religious views. As he traveled down the road that day, he saw the wounded man by using the X-ray vision of divine compassion, looking past exterior difference and right into the very heart of a physically broken fellow child of God. Perhaps the man left for dead was in the priest and Levite's thoughts and prayers as they passed on by. But the Samaritan is moved to action. He binds up his wounds, brings him to an inn, takes care of him, and provides for his continued healing. That's faith in action, not just faith in theory. The thing is, true faith can't be beholden to outward appearances or deeply held worldviews. As much as we want to believe that eternal life is reserved for our kind, that's not how it works. Much to the chagrin of so many of us with deeply held world views. But that's what started this whole thing in the first place. The lawyer's question about what one must do to inherit eternal life. And as often as happens with Jesus, it all comes down to two things: loving God and loving neighbor. So simple, yet so difficult in practice, and the ongoing spiritual challenge of our lives. Well, I have to say, you have been a truly enthusiastic and well-informed congregation, at least for a bunch of Episcopalians.